Well, good morning and welcome here. Turn your Bibles to Psalms chapter 84. This morning I would like to share a message to a very select group of people. I don't necessarily know who you are, but this message will be focused on a select group of people. And we want to look at Psalm 84, verses 4, 5, and 6, and I'll read them, and then I'll give you an explanation how I wound up here. Blessed are those who dwell in your house. They will still be praising you. Blessed is the man whose strength is in you, whose heart is set on pilgrimage. And as they pass through the valley of Baca, they will make it a spring. The rain also covers it with pools. The reason I came here was because of the phrase the Valley of Baca. And I don't know how many of you know what the Valley of Baca is, but it's translated into our English as the Valley of Tears. Baca in Psalms is a lonely place. And it's a place that in your pilgrimage as a believer, we all must go at least once. It's a place where God will take you and me through the valley of Baca. But how did I get here? Well, I have this personal principle I live by. I don't exactly view myself as a preacher, but if I get asked, and I never know if I should say yes or no. So I decided I'm going to have a system. I live by systems. And so I think if I'm thinking of something and I get asked, then I'll know that that's the message I should preach. That's my way. And if I get asked and I'm not thinking of anything, then I say, no, I can't preach because, you know, it's nothing there. So several weeks ago, Matt texted me and wondered if I would share. And I had something on my mind completely different from this. So I thought, well, I'll preach because I have something on my mind. And what do you know? As soon as I said I would, all my good ideas just kind of went poof. And I had nothing. But I wasn't overly concerned because I had at least 2 weeks to get ready and it'll come back, right? Don't sweat it, Ron. It'll be okay. It'll come back. Well, Friday night, I still had nothing. And I was starting to panic just a little bit. And then by late Friday night, I was starting to panic a lot. Because, you know, what will I say? And I don't know how you deal with anxiety, but for me, I start to think. My mind starts to go. I start to think. And I remembered a conversation I had with an old friend years ago. And he had come through a hard time in his life. And he referred in that conversation to the Valley of Baca. And I don't really remember much of that conversation, but that word, Valley of, or that phrase, Valley of Baca, just came to my mind. And I had no idea where to find it in the Bible, so I Googled it, and I found out it's in Psalm 84. So that's why we're here. And as I read that, I started thinking about life. And so this morning I have a few thoughts to share with you. They're not necessarily connected thoughts per se, but when as a believer, let's just back up a little bit and look at verse 4. Blessed are they that dwell in thy house. They will be singing praises to thee. Sometimes, as believers, we get the idea in our mind that if I live right, pray right, treat my wife right, treat my children right, that I will still be praising thee, that somehow my life will go in a direction that will go around the valley of Baca. Are you with me? And then we find out that we're suddenly in the valley, and we didn't know how we got here. You know, the practical ways that this valley is, you know, we lose a friend, someone dies, we have disease, we get sick. You know, spouses look at each other one day and said, we don't love each other anymore. Things like that really hurt deep down inside. You know, we have children that wander away from God. Things that we never dreamt would happen to us happen. And we were doing life the way we thought we were supposed to be. And so we wind up in the valley of Baca, the valley of tears. And we start a journey and suddenly all our hyper strength that we thought we had, we're not so sure anymore. The psalmist says here in verse 7, he said, they go from strength to strength. The one thing about God in the valley of Baca is that he does not take you from strength to weakness. The reason God puts valleys in our lives and pain in our lives is to make us strong. And I'd like to look at that again here soon, as soon as I can collect my thoughts here. You know, Job said, a man's life is short and full of trouble. And an inexperienced person could say that, oh, Job's just a pessimist. But, you know, you live life long enough and you'll realize that it's true. Life has trouble. But God is faithful. And that's the bottom line. So if this morning you are not feeling broken, that's okay. It's okay to be in a good place. Maybe you came out of a hard time and you're in a different time in your life. That's okay too. But if this morning you are a broken person, I'd like to share some thoughts with you about the process and the purposes of God. It's basically what I'd like to talk about. In verse 6 of Psalms, it says, who passing through the valley? The valley is not a permanent place. It's a place God takes you through. So if you're there and you're tired and you're lonely, remember that it's not forever. And the purposes of God, well, we should look at that. Let's maybe just move on to that thought. If you turn to Romans chapter 8, why would God allow you to experience things that you feel are unjust, untrue? Why does it seem that those who should be judged aren't, and God's hand is maybe on you? You know, we think about these things all different ways, depending on what our personality is, but Romans 8:28, which is a very familiar verse, I like to look at something that maybe doesn't get looked at much. It says, then we know that all things work together for good. If you're really hurting this morning, that's a verse that always, that, well, I'll just make it personal. That verse I hated. I hated that phrase. There are times in my life when people would say that, like you go to a funeral or a viewing and some big, I don't know, well, we won't describe the person, but anyway, you know, and they'll say that to you. And you're really down on your, you're really feeling blue and you're sad, and someone will say that to you. Well, don't worry there, brother, sister. All things are going to work together for good. And I'm like, oh, you know, just go away. But there is truth in it. And it's because you need the whole verse to balance the thought. Who love God. And in verse 6 of Psalms, that man did love the Lord. He was a man who was in the tabernacle of God, praising God. But it said, who are called according to his purpose. What is the purpose of God in my life and in your life? What is the purpose of God? Why does God bother with you anyway? Why not just skip over you and go on to somebody else? Why would God put his hand on your life anyway? That's the purpose of God. So for whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son. The reality is that God takes you through the valley, and God shows us these places so that we will become like his son Christ. And the first thing out of a discouraged person's mouth will be, well, so what? Who cares? Just get me out of this stupid valley. And you can be like the son if you want to, but I don't want to be. I don't want to go here. I know it's maybe not very spiritual, but it's kind of how we feel on the inside sometimes. The reality is that the reason that God wants you to be like his son is so that his hand of blessing can be on your life. He takes away the sin and the selfishness out of our hearts and our lives. And then by that, we by default become like his son. Because God wants a smile on us. He wants us to know who he is. And by doing that, he removes the blocks that prevent you from knowing him. And part of that process is going through Baca. And it's important that when you're in the Valley of Baca that you do not mistake the purpose of God with the processes of God, when the process is what you're facing. The process of God is simply that. It's the thing that God takes you through as a person to change you. And you know, you are not the process. That's another thing that's important. I was talking with a person recently who struggles with serious depression. And sometimes this person mistakes depression as himself. He doesn't separate himself from the depression. They become one thing in his mind. And that's why it doesn't feel like he's going through the valley. That means he's going to live there all the time. And the way to think about it, the way to think about these things, I think, to help us think properly is, if you go to see your friend in the hospital and he has cancer, we don't look at the person and say, oh, well, you're all cancer. We understand that the cancer is in the man. And when the doctors take the cancer out of the man and he comes back and lives in his community, we understand that the cancer has been removed and the man is here, right? It's the same way with everything else that we face in life. We are not the situation that we are facing. So remember that when you're losing courage, the process of God is there for your benefit, but it's not who you are. Another thing about the process of God is that they are often unseen in our lives. We have very good vision. This thought is actually not entirely my own. I actually remember this from somebody else that shared it with me once. What's man's best vision? What are the things we see the best? It's what's behind us, right? We can see and reflect what happened years ago with 2020 vision. And I could probably randomly pick five believers here this morning and say, get up and share what God has done for you in your past. And you could. You could say, God, help me here, here, and here, and here. But that's history now, right? Another way we have very good vision is into the future. In that we can clearly see things like we want to go to heaven. We want the Christian life. We want the Spirit-filled life. Like, we can see the promises and what is ahead. But what we don't see very well, or sometimes not at all, is what's happening right here, right now. Right now, right here, if you're a broken person, a lot of times you cannot really put your finger on it. It's like, I don't really know why I feel the way I feel. And that can be disconcerting sometimes because you're like, maybe I'm not normal. You know, ever felt that way? Maybe God has forgotten about me and he just kind of left me here. It's kind of like missing the bus. All the spiritual people got on and went on to the next big thing and I'm just here slogging it out in the desert. You can lose heart, right? So just hold that thought too. Oftentimes they're unexplainable. If you've ever been completely brokenhearted at something in your life, whatever issue it is, that's why I hated Romans 8:28 so much. People try to come and explain to you why it is the way it is, and you just know in your heart that that can't be. It's like Job and his friends, you know, that Job is sitting there and his friends are explaining to him why it is the way it is. Can I get a chief to go get me a cup of water? That would be. Thank you. Sometimes we hear the phrase, why does God let bad things happen to good people? Well, there is an answer to that question. The answer is that in God's economy, there are only two people, two kinds of people, the redeemed and the unsaved. And in the lives of the unsaved, the things that are happening to them are there to draw them to Christ. It's an effort of God's love and mercy to open our eyes to see God's redeeming love. Why do those same bad things happen to redeemed people? It's to bring you through the valley of Baca so that you will know who God really is. And that's what strength is referring to, I believe. And I'd like to get to this rain in the pools, but which will, I think, further underscore that point. But so to the broken, to the hurting, we sometimes don't see what's happening. We don't understand what's happening. But our job or our responsibility or whatever, what God has asked us to do, I think is in the second part of the verse. It says, make it a well, and the rain also filleth the pools. There's a story in the Bible. You know the story of Elijah after Mount Carmel. And then Jezebel said, I'm going to kill you because you killed all my priests of Baal. Elijah came off a very powerful experience with God on Mount Carmel. But when he heard that Jezebel wanted his life, and nobody in Israel seemed to stand up to Jezebel and say, hey, knock that guy off, you got big trouble. He despaired, and he ran for his life, and he went out into the wilderness. And the Bible tells us he laid down in the desert to die. He was too spiritual to commit suicide. You know, he knew he wasn't allowed to do that. So he said, well, the next best option would be to lay out here in the hot sun and let it kind of dry me out, and I'll die. And this is a godly man now. This man is a man who knew God. God spoke to Elijah. He wasn't a halfway committed man. And I take a lot of courage from this because sometimes we think thoughts like this. If I was only more committed, if I only was more of something, whatever would make you better than where you are right now, if only I wasn't me. There you go. That's the answer to our problems. If I wasn't me. See, Elijah. It was Elijah. Yeah, it was Elijah. He laid down. And what did God do for him there? Does anybody know? I'd like to ask the question. What did God do for him there? He sent an angel with food and water. But more than the food and the water, what God really sent him was encouragement. Right? The angel didn't represent only food and water. It said that God had not forgotten him. Right? Well, he's out there making a wholehearted effort to die. God's sitting there saying, no, angel, go down there and just feed that poor guy. Get him, tell him to get up and keep walking. And he did. That's, I think it was three times that till he got to the mountain. Now, I don't know where you are at, if you've kind of laid down to die. Sometimes we do. We just give up and we say, well, there's no point. There's just absolutely no point going on. Everybody else is fake. God is far away. And my church sucks. You know, I'm going to go. I'm going to run away. I'm going to run away. How many people have run away? Don't put up your hand. But just... A few of the super spiritual ones in this group have never run away, but most of us, it's the story of our life. We've run away like Elijah. It says, make it a well. And this is the encouragement I would have for yourself and myself. And what does it mean to make a well? In my own mind, in my own imagination, this is just my way of seeing it. Digging a well is like making your last stand. And you come to God and you say, you know what? I'm tired and I'm broken and I've lost my way. And I can clearly see now that I'm well into the Valley of Baca. We're way in here. And I'm petering out. And I've tried everything. Digging a well. The reason that you dig a well is because you have an expectation. What do you expect when you start digging a well? Water. That's right. But unless you're a lot smarter than I, if you're in a desert and you start digging, there's no promise that there's water underneath that sand. That's why hopeless people don't dig. No point digging. There's no water down there anyway. I'm going to roll over and die. But in the spiritual life, God doesn't ask you to put water in the water. He asks you to dig a hole. It's an act of faith. You say, God, I'm here. I'm me. And digging your well is reaching out to God for an expectation, a healing from whatever you want. And you say, God, here I am. I dig my well, but I need you to fill my well with living water, something to keep me alive. And God will do that for you. God will do that. That's what God has been doing in the lives of saints for centuries. When they've come into hard times, and they said, Lord, we've done what we could. We need supernatural help from you. They dig a well, and they wait for God to fill it. And you got to remember now that you're passing through the valley. It's not a permanent place. And in verse 7, it's to make you stronger. two points that we should never forget. It's not a permanent place, and it's to make you stronger. More like Christ for the purpose of the fact that God wants to come closer to you by removing the things that keep him away. And that's the purpose of the valleys of our inner lives. I think I'll tell you a story yet, and then I'll close. I met a man once, and this has helped me a lot through my life and things that I've experienced. But I met a man in Alabama, actually. It's at Fountain Correctional Center. It's actually the place where I was saved. The man who led me to the Lord actually is the man I'm talking to you about. And it talks about the Valley of Baca. I'll tell you a story about his valley. And hopefully it helps you to have some courage for your own life. So I went to Fountain Correctional Center. I volunteered with, I think it was Gospel, well, it was We Care, but I think I went down with Gospel Express. And the reason I went was because I was very disillusioned with the gospel that I had grown up on, which was, I emphasize the point, delusion. I had actually some real big issues of my own, and I just didn't know how to break free. So, and I said to myself, I wonder what kind of a gospel they preach in prison. Because you see pictures, you know, in these little flyers that they hand out, all these criminals in their jumper suits up at the altar, and I'm thinking, man, that must be quite a gospel. All these thugs are getting saved. And I looked around me and I'm thinking, nobody in my community is getting saved unless you're born in the church. You don't really, who came to my church? You know, I started asking myself those questions. I'm thinking, well, maybe I don't even know what the gospel is, you know. So I signed up as a teacher, I guess, like not an evangelist. I didn't preach, but I went around and I talked to people, and I had a Bible, and I was like, got any questions, guys? I could help you out. Anyway, that guy, I don't know what the name is. Jake, do you know what that guy is? Maybe it's a volunteer, I don't know. But anyway, I'm there in Fountain Correctional Center, and I'm walking around giving advice. Got to remember now, I'm delusional. I don't even know what gospel I believe in. That's why I went. I'm walking around through prison. There's 1,200 men in this prison. So you can make a lot of mistakes. It's just another criminal, right? I mean, there's a long rows of cages. And while I was going through that process, I met a man. And he picked me out. He picked me out like you pick an apple off a tree. Like he's like Ron, like, and he drew me into his world. And we'll skip over a lot of that discussion, but he told me his story, his testimony. This man was a black man, and so from the southern U.S., turf wars or gang life is real everywhere, but down where he was, black gang, white gang lived across town. And one night they ran across town, this guy's gang, and they shot a couple white guys. Well, in retaliation, white guys came across town, shot a bunch of black guys. Just regular gang life. Anyway, while they were having that second fight, cops came in and arrested a bunch of them for shooting each other and acting immature. And he wound up in prison. Stood before the judge, and the guy gave him 2 life sentences. Now think about that. 2 life sentences. Why would you bother giving a guy 2? Like, think about that. You got to live here two lives, this one and we don't know what other one. But you can. But the bottom line is, the guy knew one thing for sure: I'm here till the day I die in this little box. And he was angry. And then people like me would walk around with my Bible and talk, you need to forgive, and you should do this, and you should get baptized, and you should do all kinds of things. And he was in there like, I'll never serve a God like that. If God was righteous and truthful and all those things, he wouldn't have let me get caught. You know, that other guy deserved to die. And, well, you've done it all in your own mind already, haven't you? You know what that's like if you're normal. If he would have been like that, I wouldn't be like this, and that, and that, and that, and that, and that, and that. Christianity sucks. I'm never going to be a Christian. Get away from my box. Don't talk to me. And then the miracle happened. It was one night he had a dream. And he was back in that turf war. Have you ever, when you're really low, relived the events that got you to where you are? He said this to me, and then that's why I did that, and then that's what happened, and that, you know. Anyway, he's having a dream like that. And then God spoke to him, and he said, you know what? He said, you're right. You went over and shot white guys because they were bad. They came over, shot black guys, because they thought you were bad. And then you would have went over and shot more white guys because you were getting revenge on this. But eventually, in one of those scrimmages, you would have been shot dead. Right? And then what would have happened? Because I'm a righteous and just God, I would have had to put you in hell. But because I loved you, I got you caught by the cops, and I brought you to prison so you can hear about me and turn your life around. You're in prison because I love you. That's what God told him. And it made all the difference in his mind. And he had been hiding tracks. So in prison, they have these little boxes that they can keep their stuff in. And he had, at the bottom, he had been keeping the tracks and that, because someday he planned on bringing it all out and showing how all these fake Christians were, and, you know, how they couldn't agree amongst each other, even with their own literature. So he had all this plan, right? So he got out of bed, and he started pulling that out, and he started to read it, and he got born again, and his life changed. And that's the man I met. Me wandering around in Fontenay, I wonder who God is. Yeah. By the way, he's a person you meet personally if you don't know who God is. That's who he is. He's not an idea. He's an individual you meet. Well, a couple years later, I was back down there. I was back down there in that correctional institute, and I was looking for the man. I said, I want to know. I got to thank this guy, you know. And then they told me, well, Ron, you want to know something? He came up for parole. And the cop that did the paperwork was a bit sloppy, and they found some inconsistencies in the trial, so they threw it out, and he's free. He got out of prison, two life sentences. They just dismissed the case, and he's a free man today. I still want to go to Alabama someday and find him. I hope he lives long enough for me to find the man. But I tell you that story. Now put that story into your life, into the thing that you're facing. And then put the prison time and the Valley of Baca together in your own heart and mind. And just see how God flushes that out for you. Because God doesn't have you somewhere to hold you there. God has you where you are to show you who he is. And he wants you to know who he is. He wants to bring you through the Valley of Baca. He wants to bring you through your trial. So that someday, When you see somebody else going through the very same thing, you can loop around and say, hey, buddy, you won't die. You're going to make it. And how many of us have had a person like that in our life where we've been in a tough place and we met somebody who was there and they say, I know what it's like. And it gives you tremendous hope, right? Because we say, you survived? So can I. You know? And that's how we become like Christ. Right? So those are the random thoughts that I thought up between about 10 o'clock Friday night to about 10 o'clock Saturday night. And I just jotted them down and I said, I'll share what I have. And be encouraged. God is also the great healer when we come out through our valley. Thanks for now.